Hello, everyone. I'm Mary. I'm an addict. lovely to be here. Lovely to hear you, Vanessa. It's great. Always good to see you. Make me smile. Make me smile. I love your accent. Your middle class swearing. It tickles me. I love it. I love it. And there's a lot of people. A lot of people I know and love in this room. Actually, I wasn't expecting that, and not expecting it to be so small. I got Hugo. I remember Hugo when he first walked in. Bex. I've known Bex pretty much most of my recovery, and I've even got. I always get her rank wrong, so I've got to be careful here. So she was a member of staff at the treatment centre I got clean at. I keep saying keyword. I know she's not a keyword. She's a counsellor. That's it. She's a counsellor. She's in, and she really. I just reflect the second I see her. I can reflect, and I just remember vividly a conversation we had when I was moaning or in self pity or self centeredness, and she just relayed a bit of her story, I became a shrinking violet, and I just thought, right, I just need to get on with this. So I'm always grateful for that show, and I'll always remember that. And you sharing with me, that's all we do is just share. You know, I try not to add things on, and just keep it as authentic as possible. And like you, Vanessa, life didn't suit me. You know, it just didn't suit me. So drugs suited me, and I used drugs as a vehicle until that vehicle completely broke down. I drove it into a brick wall. Then I was without a vehicle, and I found Narcotics Anonymous via the treatment centre that Sharon was at, and that's my vehicle. And I've come to realise that I need a vehicle to guide me through, because I can't do it on my own. I can't, and I've come to realise that. And I need the structure and the discipline. But pretty much, it's all to do with my mouth. What I put in, what I eat, drink, smoke, what comes out, you know, that negative dialogue, what you're looking at, what time's this, where's my money, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know. So I've got to watch what I put in and watch what I put, what comes out. And for me at the moment, I've whittled down all my addictions. I've whittled them down. I'm non-smoking for 18 months. I caffeine free for about 10, 11 months, all because of little rock bottoms. And so now I'm vegetarian, because food will finish the job that drugs started if I'm not, you know, disciplined around it. And now I'm intermittent fasting, and I haven't quite worked that out, because I'm getting a lot more tired than I used to. So I'm just thinking, as long as I'm not eating meat, you know, and I get a little spiritual feeling from no animals have died for me today, you know. So I get that tiny spiritual feeling on top of all the other tiny spiritual feelings. I get, you know, substantial spirituality within the course of the day. So 6-7 weeks ago, I had a completely different life, you know. I was living with someone at lockdown. Bex met this lady, and I was living with her, and I was building. I was doing a building company that was quite successful through lockdown. People were looking at their furlough money and we need to get our house done. And we got really, really busy. And then so moved in, no conscious decision to move in with this woman. Lockdown, like COVID made that decision for us. And then as soon as I moved in, the cracks started to appear. What I thought I was accepting stuff, I wasn't. I was storing it. I was storing it until that storage space was full, and it all came crashing down on me. All these things I thought I'd accepted, and they weren't. It was all ammunition. I was just shooting, you know, using it all as ammo. And I've learned a lot about acceptance very recently. Acceptance is something, it's a part of inclusion, I think. I have to absorb it and feel the pain of this situation, whatever it is, and let it pass through me for me to actually accept it and deal with it, as opposed to, oh yeah, okay, I accept that, I'm not accepting anything. And so today I'm back in my flat, very small bungalow in the house next door to my mum and dad, who are in their 80s. I think Sharon's met them. And I've got a new job. So when I came in, I was unemployed and unemployable. I was really broken, didn't know who I was, where I was. And I was unemployable for the first time in my life. Financial insecurity was a main factor of me coming into recovery. And I now I've made a conscious decision to put the building down, and I picked up a new career within the field of addiction in a specific area in bloodborne viruses, which I haven't had. I'm doing a lot of training around that. So it's all really, Narcotics Anonymous has just given me a whole host of choices. You know, I choose not to drink and use drugs. I choose not to smoke. I choose not to eat meat. I choose what career I want. You know, I choose to help my parents. And it's just a whole host of choices. But with those choices come responsibility, like a lot of responsibility that I'm kind of finding it difficult, especially with this massive, like I'm hooked on this intermittent fasting. I'm like, I only eat between 1 and 7, and I'm falling asleep during the day, and I'm really hungry about 11:30. I'm looking at my watch going, oh God, it's coming 11:30, like 1 o'clock, 12 comes, 12:45. I'm just like, right, I can't wait another 15 minutes. I'm off. And it's just like, so, and I'm getting really tired at work. I thought the job would be a lot more easier. I want an easy ticket. I want an easy way out. And I thought this job, talk with a few addicts, blood test them, and it's going to be all really nice and cushy. It's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. A whole new different type of exhaustion, you know. I'm just almost headachy at the end of each day, you know, a little bit of a headache. So, you know, that serves me right, huh? Thinking I've got the easy way out. And what's going on as well? I mean, a lot of sadness around, you know, this relationship, what I couldn't accept. I'm kind of looking at myself, and I am going into morbid reflection, what should have, could have, would have happened. I'm doing all that stuff, beating myself up a little bit. Should never have moved in. My parents really need, I'm just doing all this stuff. I've created this super highway that I'm just chucking loads of negative thoughts down, and I'm feeding this highway. I've not been quite like this. So sad and insecure throughout my, anyone that knows me knows I'm really, you know, recovery steps, sponsorship, and COVID allowed me to be complacent. You know, I can hide behind that, you know, I can hide behind lockdown, you know. And there was a kind of really weird familiarity, like addiction takes you to isolation. It's invisible illness, isolation. COVID's invisible and insists that you isolate. It's kind of like, where, okay, I'm sitting in this one bedroom flat, isolating through COVID, but I haven't got any gear to sort me, you know. It's fucking boring, you know. I'm boring, I'm feeling lonely. You know, loneliness follows me, you know. It's a real turning point in my life and my recovery. I'm getting, you know, I invested a lot of time in a lot of people in my early recovery. When I came in, I all my friends were using, and I deleted their numbers. They only want me to, they only know Mario when he uses. They don't know, think I'm some kind of really weird God botherer, you know, want to start exercising them, you know, getting their spirits out or something. I don't know. They're all kind of take a wide berth of me, and they know me when I'm drinking and using, and they don't know me anymore. So I needed a lot of friends. I needed to know, you know, where you were from, how long you were clean, you know, were you single, you know, all that stuff. I needed to know everything. And a lot of time that I invested in a lot of these people that I needed, I'm really upset with a kind of lot of stuff that they, you know, I've given them a lot of love or whatever else I've given them, and I'm not happy with what they've done with it, is what my sponsor said. He said, you're giving too much away, you know, pick and choose who you have it with, you know. And I went to a meeting last night. I kind of fell out with a sponsee. They were messing around with newcomers and consistently, and I really kind of had strong feelings about it. And they've gone out and saying things about me, and there was another guy that, you know, just all these people that I genuinely don't like anymore. I've outgrown or recoveries, or, you know, gone different ways. And what recovery's taught me is I will stay away from the meeting for 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, maybe four, but by the fifth week I'm back there, you know, and I will never stay away for it indefinitely. So I'm back at this meeting. Sponsor sees the secretary, see their eyes roll in a shared, you know, and I'm kind of like trying to just face it. And you know, I'm kind of look at myself thinking, well, actually, I'm quite happy with myself, you know, the way I conduct myself. And so, you know, why would I hide away? You know, why would I, you know, and they say, you know, it's a really easy one. You know, what people think of you is none of your business. It's a really easy one to say. It's kind of hard one to practice. So, you know, I'm kind of in a, yeah, massive kind of turning point or growing pains. I think that's what they call it. I've got growing pains. I'm in the kind of a lot of stuff. And lo and behold, spoke to my sponsor today. I've asked for God to take my will. I've been to a meeting. I'm doing a sharing in the meeting. You know, I spoke to a sponsee. You know, and I know I'm going to be all right. You know, I can wallow in all this stuff, and you know, poor me. You know, but it's no point. You know, and I know whatever I'm feeling, it will pass. You know, my dad is got early onset dementia. I mean, that's a diagnosis I've given him. He's going deaf, and he keeps forgetting things, and he's really hard to manage. He's really, really difficult. He just got me involved in something. Every time he gets it, I've got to try and follow it through. I've got to try and do it his way. I've got, and I just saps the patience out of me. And I just walked, I had to walk out. It's just absolutely drained. He doesn't listen. He accused me of taking his phone. You know, it's just like, wow, you know, and he's 85 next month. And he's, you know, I caught him on the roof, fixing the roof. You know, he's able-bodied, but his head's going. Mum's sharp as a tack, but she's had two knee reconstructions. So maybe if I dismembered them, I might make one decent parent. But yeah, I don't know where that came from, actually. But anyway, yeah, I find them really, really difficult to manage, and my patience around them is really with the job. And then, so I've really got to look at my nutrition. I think that is probably where a lot of my, you know, where I'm getting drained so quickly. I'm not eating properly. I'm kind of almost feels like I'm punishing myself because I can just eat on my feelings, you know. And I know I'm doing it. I know I'm doing it. One too many people said you're putting a bit of weight on. So I can address that stuff. You know, I can, you know, the framework of Narcotics Anonymous and the 12 steps and good sponsorship helps me. I need a discipline, you know, and today, you know, when they say they're still suffering addicts inside and outside of the rooms, that's me. I'm in that today, you know, and I'm in that quite a few days where I'm suffering, you know. In essence, you know, I'm a white keyring man, you know. I've got over four years clean, but I'm a white keyring man. It's you know, it's a 24-hour illness. You know, it's a live show, my mate says, and I have to stay in the process to stay clean because I can get derailed really, really easily. And the first question in the step working guide is, what does the disease of addiction mean to you and mean to me? And I can remember when I first hit it, and I was writing like loads of, you know, stock answers, my sponsor called it. He said, there's stock answers, but what does it mean to you? And I said, no, well, I that's it. I said, well, you tell me, what does it mean to you? And he said, very simply, he said, you've got a set of behaviours that need addressing. And that's basically it. I have a set of behaviours, you know, these ingrained behaviours that I need to address by staying, you know, close to the fellowship. I kind of feel like, and what I'm doing as well, I've been talking to Tuesday's a really good friend of mine from over the water there, and we have some great conversations, and was talking about service. So what happened when lockdown came in, I was secretary of a meeting for over a year, and I was doing a lot of sharing, and then the live meetings came up, and I kind of went at NA was a little bit slow at the beginning, so I was doing a little bit of the mothership, and I was doing a bit of speaking, and so now I've got like about 3 or 4 shares in the next week that are 2 different fellowships. Some are live and some are online. So it's all of a sudden, like almost like my using, it's kind of just blown up in my face where I was so busy doing, you know, and not really managing what I do. So I can make my recovery completely unmanageable. Again, I'll chuck COVID, I was all right before, but COVID, you know, I can start blaming stuff, but it's me, my lack of awareness or boundaries. You know, I really struggle with boundaries and for myself, you know, and people pleasing, and I'm still really deep in that stuff, you know. I've kind of say no to the other fellowship because I don't really need it anymore. And 2, I don't know whether to dedicate, you know, or do online of both or what days, you know, kind of I can make anything really, really complicated. I can make something so beautiful and, you know, simple program, really, really complicated. I can get detached through work, chasing money, you know, thank you. Yeah, acknowledged. I just so relate to that tradition, and I can manipulate it in my life. You know, money, property, prestige, and a girl on my arm can divert me from my primary purpose. My primary purpose is to stay clean and carry a message. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm falling out with people that, you know, that I didn't feel any unity at the meeting last night. I come away resentful, and I'm doing a share for 2 different fellowship. How did all that happen? How did that happen? Just take my eye off the ball. I've got no balance in my recovery. I'd love to be, you know, happy, joyous and free. You know, this is the greatest day of my life, but that's completely unrealistic. You know, I've got no balance. I'm peaking and troughing. And there's an analogy that I use. I don't know if a few of you are probably old enough to remember the Haynes manual, where in the 80s, when you bought a car and you couldn't afford a mechanic, you buy a manual on that car. So it's mechanics for dummies. So when you wanted to change your distributor or the brake pads, you could just look it up, and it was a step-by-step guide. But when the car was running fine, you didn't really read the manual. And that's kind of where I'm at with NA. I'll kind of rest on my laurels. I'll drive it until I emotionally break down. And then I'll just pick it all up again. And, you know, I really kind of, you know, easily diverted from my primary purpose. This new job, I'm really keen on getting it right. I want another feather in my cap. And whether it's stroking my own ego or what, or look what I can do. And I'll just put everything else down, you know, and I'll focus. And got no discipline. I don't know whether that means I'm disconnected from my higher power. And what with this job as well, I've got a lot of downtime as well. And the main reason I do this stuff, Narcotics Anonymous, the meetings and everything that's involved with it, is because I really genuinely don't know what else to do. Like today I had a lot of time on my own, and I went and copped a resentment with a girl in Cafe Nero. She charged me twice for a coffee. I went back, you know, you charged me twice. I just create an issue, and I kind of recognised it. And like, it's only £3.45. I'll get her tomorrow. You know, it's really, you know, little tiny little spanners in these grinding cogs, you know, that, you know, springs popping out everywhere. And you know, and it wasn't like this, you know, a week or so ago. It wasn't like this at all. This is just me sort of today. And it kind of feels, you know, I don't know if any of it made sense. It just really, really kind of makes sense to share it with you guys. I have been happy, joyous and free. I think it was for about 15 minutes, 2.5 years ago. And then I got a phone call from a solicitor saying I had a CCJ, and that, you know, that freedom went. But I'm free from active addiction, and I'm probably going to do a gratitude list later, because I feel like I've just had a right fucking moan. And it's really lovely to be in the meeting, and lovely to see some beautiful people. Thanks, guys.